Good morning. Welcome back. Actually, not welcome back. Welcome to the first podcast on this new channel on the RoboSearch Podcast Network. Sorry about last night. So this is a podcast about sobriety, sort of. It's a podcast about kind of what my path, I guess, to sobriety. I've always said, you know, just when I think I'm sober, I realize how not sober I am. And then when I realize how not sober I am, how sober I become. And then all of a sudden, all these other demons in, and then I question everything over again, and it's just a crazy-ass cycle. I say, you know, I've worked on my sobriety. I climb to the top of the mountain. I get to the very point, and then I run around at the top, and I just make more trouble for myself. I mean, what is sobriety? At the time, I remember, so I thought maybe on this first podcast, I'm not a sobriety expert. I'm not an AA expert. I'm not an expert at anything. I'm just going to share kind of my path and what I've gone through. And if it can help somebody, it can. Maybe just me doing this helps me. But I just thought maybe on this first podcast, I would talk about, you know, just the beginning for me and how it started. And, you know, I don't know. I'm just going to dump thoughts. Listen, don't listen. But this is the Sorry About Last Night podcast.
In the morning, crack of dawning, now I'm yawning, wipe the cold out my eye, see who's this page of me, and why, it's my nigga Pop from the barbershop, told me he was in the gambling spot, and heard the intricate plot, a niggas wanna stick me like flypaper, neighbor, slow down love, please chill, drop the caper, remember them niggas from the hill up in Brownsville, that you rolled dice with, smoking blood and got nice with. Yeah, my nigga Fame up in Prospect. Nah, them my niggas, nah, love wouldn't disrespect. I didn't say them, they schooled me to some niggas that you knew from back when you was clocking minor figures. Now they heard you blowing up like nitro, when they wanna stick the knife through your windpipe slow. So, thank Fame for warning me.
So, I'm gonna go back, I don't know, I'm gonna jump around, I'm sure, quite a bit, but I guess, you know, I'll just start from the beginning, you know. I'm 51 years old. I was born in 1968 in September. I was adopted. I don't know what adoption and being adopted would later play. And I don't even know what role it plays actually in my life today. I just know that that's what it was. I was adopted by two great parents. I love the story. My dad was in Vietnam, and they called him, and they said, hey, you're a father. And he goes, geez, my wife wasn't even pregnant when I left. And that's always been kind of a running joke with our family because, you know, my mom was not pregnant when my father went to Vietnam, but they had applied to adopt a child, and that all kind of worked out while he was in Vietnam. So that's when I showed up. But just everything was normal, I think, for me as a kid. I can look back and say, oh, my God, look at that. Look at what we did back then. Did that make me the way I am, or is that the reason? And I think that I got sober. I've been sober, I guess, almost somewhat 25 years or so. And, you know, what I think is sobriety, and I'll kind of get into it later. You're just going to have to be a little bit patient with me because this is all kind of new. So trying to dump this out into a podcast is going to be a little challenging until I figure out the path and how I want to do this. But, you know, in the end, I've diagnosed myself as a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. That would end up being my problem. And I don't know if growing up has anything to do with that. I remember as a kid, you know, my first real, to me, and this is after going through a whole lot of stuff and reflecting, I can always remember this time I was at a soccer party at a pizza place in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I think it was called Godfather's. And I remember this pizza would come out, and it was probably maybe 10 or 15 kids, and the pizza would come out. And all I could think about was if I was going to get a second piece or a third piece. It wasn't like I couldn't enjoy what I was doing. All I cared about was I going to be able to get that second piece of pizza or the third piece? And it was just this, you know, get the bite in my mouth, chew, 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 get the second bite in my mouth, keeping that eye on that second piece of pizza. In fact, just talking about it, I can remember looking at that pizza. And by the way, Godfather's pizza was really good back then. I mean, with that later, I think that would later become what addiction was for me. Always had to do more, always had to get more. My real introduction, you know, I think, you know, as a parent, we think about, you know, we keep the bad people away. You know, oh my God, look at that shady guy. Keep that guy away from my kids. I don't want anybody hurting my kids. And my real introduction to substance and bad behavior was actually a guy that the son of my dad's boss at the time. And I won't say his name, but we, you know, he was almost like part of the family. He was my dad's boss. And his son was the guy that introduced me to almost every bad thing that I would later turn to in my life. I remember he babysat us. We were just little kids and he was older, so he would babysit us for the summer. And I remember, you know, let's look in your parents' cabinet. Do they got any pills? I remember looking in the cabinet, finding shit in the fucking cabinet and taking it. I don't have any idea what it was. I don't think my parents were on pills, so we were probably just taking some dumb bullshit. But I remember taking it and then rolling around in the grass, acting like I was affected by a pill. And I don't even remember what the pills were. But I remember taking it and trying to impress this guy because I really looked up to him. I guess that would kind of be the story for my whole life, really. It's just not really having an identity, trying to always impress somebody, trying to fit in, maybe not thinking that I actually fit in anywhere. It's hard to figure out what started it all. I know that the first time I had a drink, he was the one that gave it to me. And the more I drank, the more it was to impress this older kid who was, you know, part of the family, so to speak. And I remember we drank, and I can still, like, taste that freaking liquor right now when I think about it. And it wasn't like we just drank one thing. We took a drink and probably everything in the liquor cabinet at the time. And I remember I was hammered, and I was probably 12, 13, I don't even know, but I got hammered, and I ended up throwing up, and this kid's solution for the problem was to crush up Oreos into my pile of puke so that my parents wouldn't smell the alcohol. And, you know, it's funny, I think back on it now, and I'm like, why didn't they smell the alcohol? I mean, I just threw up a boatload of alcohol, but nobody ever smelled it. It was very, I don't know, it's funny. I think about it now. But I remember the second time I got drunk, I think was with this kid, and we wanted to reenact the fun that we had had the first time we had drank the alcohol. And I think that would kind of be the theme of my life. It was always about, let's do this so that we can recreate the fun we had when we did that. And it was never about the moment. It was always about trying to recreate the fun that we had previously had. But yeah, so I remember drinking with him. And I think that was my first introduction to alcohol. And we drank, and then, you know, it's funny. I'm an alcoholic. But I didn't start off as an alcoholic. I used to drink with my friends. It was always about We had to get drunk to have fun. I do remember that. Drinking a lot of Evan Williams and whatever it was. And, yeah, it's crazy. I always say I never became an alcoholic until I tried to quit. Up until that point, I just drink a lot of alcohol. I just have fun. So, you know, fast forward however many years. I mean, I probably started drinking when I was 12, 13, you know, a sip, trying it and getting, you know, like the moments that I shared. But probably really didn't start drinking until I was 16, 17 maybe. And I got sober in 97. So let me think. Let me do the math here. I don't even know what math I'm trying to do. Let me think. Here, have some more music. Niggas want to stick me for my paper. Damn. Niggas want to stick me for my paper. Damn. Niggas want to stick me for my paper. They heard about the Rolexes and the Lexus with the Texas lights and places out of state. They heard about the pounds you got down in Georgetown. And they heard you got half of Virginia locked down. They even heard about the clip you bought your mom from Florida, the fifth corridor. Call the coroner. It's gonna be a lot of slow singing and flower bringing if my burglar alarm starts ringing. So 23 years it's been. Wow, that's crazy. So what was, let me think, 15, so 13, I don't know. Anyway, it was a long time. I can't even think of, you know, I knew I wanted to start this podcast and talk about my journey about getting sober, but I knew that it, when I started to do it and when it started to come out, it was just going to come out in a big jumbled mess. So the fun thing about this podcast is that not many people probably listen, but I'm going to figure out how to get this story out because it bounces around in my head every day. How can I get this story out? Because my path to getting sober has been up and down. The definition of what I wanted out of sobriety has changed. And so it's hard for me to even know where I am with sobriety. I looked up the definition of sober and it said to be without drink. I remember when I first came into, because I used a 12-step program, and I remember the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. I think that's a first step for a lot of things, not just AA, but we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I was like, I can relate to that. We admitted, I was just talking about this with somebody yesterday, you know, we admitted, I could admit to anything at the time when I got sober. I was such a scoundrel. I was bouncing along the bottom. My life really had no purpose. I was working and drinking. And so admitting, you know, yeah, I wrecked the car. Yeah, I remember I broke my uncle's well with my car. Yeah, I did it. I'm sorry. I was great at admitting, and I was great at saying sorry. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. I didn't understand what that meant. All I know is that I drank a lot. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I thought it said, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable because of alcohol. I didn't realize that's what I thought. It took years for me to understand that. So the day that I quit drinking, I figured that I fixed really all those problems, and it's time to move on to the next step in the progress of trying to get sober. In fact, the first step of any program like that is, you know, I think it's the one that's, we're so ready, whether it's embarrassment or shame or stitches or whatever brought us in, we're just at that point. We're so ready that admitting, to hear the word admit, to hear the word powerless, and to hear the word alcohol, I fit into all those. So I was like, great. And I moved on to the next step. And Those 12-step programs, they have a funny way of putting things in there that you don't really, that I would graze right over and not really pay attention to. And 23 years later, I look back and I say, we admitted. Those two words are like huge, right? We as a group, because it takes a group. You can't do this by yourself. Admitted. That would probably be my first humble act that I had done and not even realizing it. We admitted what? I surrender. You know, you can't talk about humility, but we can change the word for it and we can discuss those. So surrender, admitted, you know, gave up. Basically, we surrender. I give up. I surrender. But I didn't take it as that. And that would turn out to be, you know, looking back at the first step, that would probably be one of the, you know, the first things that I would start realizing is that there's a lot more to getting sober than just not drinking and picking up a stupid coin. You know, I wrote, are you sober or are you mind your own fucking business sober? Is there a difference? I mean, what is the goal? I mean, when I first came into, to, you know, trying to get off of drinking and get off of drugs, I think I would later realize that I really just want to stop getting caught at it, if I'm going to be, like, really honest about it. I don't think it, I had any, I don't really have any idea what sobriety was. I'm not sure if I had much interest in it. I just wanted to stop getting caught. And, yeah, it's weird to think about. But when I first came in, you know, and here, I'll just, let me get back to kind of sharing my story. So March 31st, 1997, I was at a bar and I got into a fight. Actually, I didn't get into a fight. If I'm going to be real honest, I got punched in the face because I was running my toxic fucking mouth. And, it was last call. And if anybody out there that's struggling with alcohol probably can relate to this story, you know, it was last call. I needed two more, you know, give me two more. I needed one to drink and another one to hold so that when we passed the witching hour where we couldn't get any more alcohol, I knew that I still had another, which is absolute insanity. But I, you know, and I've probably been going to this bar for a while. I probably reenacted the same last call bullshit 100 times. And the bartender was just like, yeah, yeah, I'll be right there. I'm like, you know, I need another one. You know, two more. And inside he's like, whatever. You know, this guy's an asshole. And I remember he came back and he's like, sorry. Can't serve anymore. And I've, you know, I probably laid some stream of cuss words and negativeness out of my mouth, blah, probably explaining to him what an asshole he was for not giving me that last drink. And then out of the blue, out of nowhere, I got hit in the face. I don't know if it was a bottle, a fist, the hand of God. I don't know what it was, but man, it dropped me down to my knees. And I remember it like it was just yesterday. I was down on my hands and knees looking at this dirty old wooden hardwood floor and just watching the blood drip from my mouth. Drip, drip. It was so surreal, so slow. And I remember, and I was facing east because I was facing, headed towards the beach. And I looked to my right. And my buddy Bill, who was the bartender, had come around the bar and was heading my way. And I don't remember seeing any other people. I know there was other people, but all I remember is looking up and seeing Bill coming towards me. And the asshole that I was, I remember thinking, oh, Bill, he's my friend. He's going to come help me. And he slowly walked over, picked me up, walked me to the north, and threw me out the front door onto the sidewalk. And I remember sitting there and I remember sticking my tongue out of my mouth to feel my lip and feeling the split from my lip up into my left nose hole. I mean, my lip was just split wide open. And I remember I had to call a friend, and they took me to the hospital. I just shared this story last night. I have a friend that's kind of going through some shit with another person, and I just shared this story last night. And, you know, it brought back a lot of memories. So the person took me to the hospital, and I went to the ER, and a Dr. Angel, that was his name. I forget his last name, but Dr. Angel was his name, and he sewed up my lip. And I remember I didn't think, oh, look at you, Tom, you drink too much. You shouldn't drink so much. Or, look, another fucking pickle you got yourself into because of alcohol. Maybe you should really consider quitting. All I could think about was, how am I going to explain to my friends at work the next day these stitches? And how shitty I was going to feel the next day, because I think this was on a Sunday. And it was definitely on a Sunday because, actually, I shouldn't say that. I'm pretty sure it was a Sunday because I think back then you couldn't buy alcohol on Sundays, so you probably had to go to a bar. I don't know. I'm not sure what day it was. But whatever. I know I worked the next day. And so I didn't think, oh, you drink too much. You should really quit, Tom. Look at this. I was just concerned about what other people were going to think of me. And a nurse at the hospital said, do you think you have a drinking problem? And I said, I do. I think I have a drinking problem. And to rewind a little bit, I had been drinking. When I was out living out in San Diego, and I'll bounce around with all this story, but prior to coming to Delaware, I was living out in San Diego, and I was doing a lot of drugs, a lot of speed. I wasn't doing a lot of drinking, actually, back then. Actually, I was doing so much speed that the alcohol really didn't have any effect. So I was kind of in the speed game. We were kind of selling it and running the streets, and I got myself in some trouble. And my father said, listen, we're moving back to Delaware. If you would like to come with us, you can come with us. If you don't, you're going to be on your own. And I had gotten in trouble with the cops, and I was just trying to get out of that situation. And I thought maybe moving would be a good idea. So I packed up a U-Haul, loaded all my shit, and drove across the United States to Delaware from San Diego, and did speed the whole way. I mean, just out of our minds coming over here. And when we finally got to Delaware, there was no speed, thank God. So what did I do? I turned to the next best thing, alcohol. And that's really where my alcoholism, or really when my drinking kicked in, kind of got into this dark rut. I started working out of this gas station on the graveyard shift, and I remember I would get off work, and I would crack open a beer. And it was like 8 in the morning, and I'm drinking beer. But that was like my 5 o'clock, you know. That was my end of the day. I deserved it. But it just put me into this, you know, drinking in the morning, passing out, waking up, going to work at a graveyard shift in a gas station rut. And I couldn't get out of it. And it would just continue to grind and grind like that. I ended up getting a job in a golf course, and that's where I was working when I got into this, when I got my ass kicked at this bar. And the, you know, I like the guys I work with, and I think that was one of the first things that I thought about. Why? What am I going to say? How am I going to explain? And I'd gotten into some other shit. I was just constantly drunk. So I think I was like, why? How am I going to explain this again? And the lady asked me, and she gave me an out. And back then, the hospital, the local hospital here, had a kind of a detox program on the fifth floor. And she asked me, and I said, I do. And she asked me if I can get you into a program, would you detox here? Would you be interested? And I said, yes. Assuming that I wanted to get sober, but looking back on it, really, I just wanted to avoid explaining what had happened. So I really hid up there for 5 days. But I wouldn't really realize this. You know, these are that's kind of like what I was saying in the beginning, is that just when I think I have it figured out, I realize I don't. And just when I figured out that I don't have it figured out makes me think that I have it figured out, that's when I really don't have it figured out, if that makes any sense. And I would look back on it and say, because, you know, my story takes a lot of turns. You know, I was sober for almost 7 years and picked up a drink. And I would have to take a hard look at a lot of the prior stuff in my life, especially the past 6 years, to realize that I never really wanted to be sober. I just wanted to stop getting caught. And me coming into the program, I said was about me getting sober. It was really about me avoiding explaining to my friends how come I had stitches again. That would be my motivation. I would like to think, oh, I want to get sober and improve my life. And no, I just wanted to, I had a chicken shit out and I took it. And but that was okay. You know, I don't regret anything. But so I went up there and I hid for 5 days. And I remember, I think it was a Tuesday. So I got drunk. I got punched on Sunday, admitted on Monday. And Tuesday night, I was up at the fifth floor and a guy comes up and he says, listen, we do a meeting downstairs. Would you like to go? And I said, yes. And that would be my very, it wouldn't be my first meeting. I'd been to other meetings, but this would be the first meeting that I think that I had some sort of interest in what they had to offer. And I look back at it now and I think, God, you know, a guy comes up and asks me if I would like to go to a meeting. I was so disconnected from relationships that just that felt good. Like, oh, you would like me to come to this meeting? It was very crazy. And so it just felt good to have somebody that really cared. And so he asked me if I'd like to go to the meeting. I went down. They all made fun of my stitches. You know, oh, shit. Wonder what this story is. Yeah, you definitely need a meeting. Because I was beat up pretty bad. I mean, you can imagine a split all the way up your lip into the nose hole, all sewed up, is going to swell, bruise. I mean, I probably had black eyes from it, too. It was bad. And it was very humbling, low moment, only hoping to go up from that point. So, so I started going to the meetings. And I remember a guy came up to me that night and he says, listen, I'm going to be your sponsor. And once again, I was like, okay, that felt good. Like all of a sudden now I'm part of a group. Somebody cares. Somebody's going to kind of take care of me. Someone's going to help kind of guide me. And I hadn't had that. You know, I've been shucking and jiving and running the streets for so long. An honest, kind relationship like that, I was unfamiliar with. And so that felt good. I always say to anybody that's going to try to get sober, that wants to get sober, you know, get involved. They'll call it the toolbox, you know. These little things would become very important to me in my path to working on getting sober, trying to stay sober, stay involved, and then for me to later play a role in other people's life to do the same thing. So a guy named Ron came and said, listen, I'm going to be your sponsor. I was like, okay. And away we went. They offered this, they didn't offer, it was part of the program, as a, you know, like an outpatient program where we had a meeting with this group and every Thursday. I would end up making a lot of friends in there. I do think that that was a big reason that I was able to also stay sober for the time when I was doing this. And because I hadn't been a part of any group. You know, the only group that I was ever a part of was some group trying to find something, getting some sort of trouble as a group. You know, whether we were out trying to find some weed or trying to score beer or whatever it is we were out trying to do as a group, that's the only group that I was familiar with. So to be part of a group of people trying to do the same thing as far as sobriety, that felt really good as well. I had gone to meetings before. You know, my parents wanted me not to smoke pot. My parents wanted me not to drink. You need to go to meetings. I would go, but I didn't want anything they had to offer. I would show up late. I would be the first one to leave if I even went at all. I didn't get involved. And one of the first things that, Ron telling me, you know, I'm going to be your sponsor. And the first thing I'm going to need you to do is I need you to make coffee. And I was like, holy shit, I have a job. You know, people expect something of me. And, you know, all these little things, they would reveal more and more about how much this program is not, or a program like that isn't as much about the drinking. It's about the accountability. And I hadn't really been accountable to anybody. And now a guy was asking me to be accountable, show up and make this coffee. And for a guy like me at the time where I was, it was huge. And, I was there every week. I got there early. I was there a half hour early making the coffee. But, you know, I look back at it and I wanted the approval. How's the coffee? Coffee, everybody? Is it good? How's the fucking coffee, everybody? It's good. Okay. You know, but I would be like, is it great? Is the coffee great? You know, it's a, this weird shit would continue to be revealed like that. You know, I've seen, that's why, I had to learn these lessons the hard way, but it was a great lesson to learn.
No more, nigga. Feel the rough, scandalous. The more weed smoke I puff, the more dangerous. I don't give a fuck about you or your weak crew. What you gonna do when Big Papa come for you? I'm not running, nigga. I bust my gun and hold on. I hear somebody coming.
You know, it's funny I play that song. That song takes me back to when I was deep into my addiction. Redheaded kid I knew turned me onto that song, and I was just blown away by Biggie Smalls. And I didn't really listen to that kind of that music. I did like Dre, but I remember just that song and him and I used to drink. And it's a crazy song. I love that song. Sorry if I had to play it, but my podcast, I do whatever I want. So to kind of, what the fuck is all these beeping and shit going on? The coffee, making the coffee. Yeah, making the coffee. That would expose a lot of weird shit about me. And it exposes a lot of weird shit about a lot of people that make coffee. I remember at a meeting, this guy, we asked him, you need to make the coffee. He was a newcomer. And, you know, you just make the coffee. That's it. But he would come in, he would make the coffee, but he would bring in fresh cream. And he would make donuts and cookies and all this junk for the meeting because he wanted to be accepted. He wanted to be better. You know, that's kind of how I can't really explain it. It's just this weird side that comes out of a lot of people that, you know, when I say do one or when a suggestion is made, they want to do it better. And the problem is that a lot of people in programs like that are like, dude, all we said was make the fucking coffee. We said make donuts, and then all of a sudden feelings come in, and people's feelings get hurt, and then they're like, well, they don't appreciate me, fuck that, fuck this, I'm out, and they leave. And it's like, dude, just make the coffee. And so I experienced that. I was told just make the coffee, and I wanted to make the best coffee, and I wanted to be recognized. And it was a great lesson in the beginning. I hadn't been asked to do anything like that, so it made me feel part of a group, made me feel accountable. But at the same time, it exposed a lot of other weird shit about me, this insecurity and fear and wanting to be liked and not being good enough and constantly being a victim and all this weird shit that comes out of these little tasks that I was given when I first got sober. I loved it. But, you know, I look back on it, and it was very crazy. So I started, you know, that's kind of how I got into the program. And, you know, I don't know. I know that if I have a drink, I can't stop. But I don't know if I was if it was always like that. You know, I remember when I first started, when I first got into drinking alcohol, I didn't have to drink every day. In fact, I didn't drink every day. In fact, I probably drank, we experimented with alcohol maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 months. And then when I finally, I hooked up with this group of people that like drinking. And, you know, this was 84, 85. I think you could, I remember we used to sit on the sidewalk at 7-Eleven and get people to buy us beer. I don't know. I'm sure there were rules, but it seemed a little more lax back then. I feel like we could get away with a little more shit back then. That was clearly before, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving and, you know, these big drunk campaigns that would start to help teens from drinking. But back then it was, I don't know, it was a little more free to do what we wanted. And that's when that let me drink to reenact what we did the night before or the couple days before. Let's have fun again like we did, though, you know, a few days ago with drinking. It was, and that's kind of where that, this kind of this weird habit started. But one thing that would eventually start showing itself is my anger. I was not a nice drunk. I would say shit. I would say mean shit. I would behave in a mean way. I mean, I wouldn't like go around beating up people, but I was just nasty. And that would be kind of the constant thread through my whole drinking career, is just this nasty, negative, sad, hurtful person. And I don't know where that comes from. Maybe that comes from being adopted. Maybe it's just how I am. Maybe it's like the devil that's inside of me. I don't know. You know, I remember like always at Christmas, big fights with my family over, you know, whatever. I think as I think about it now, one of the cool things about getting sober was just not having these big dramatic blowouts at Christmas and the holidays. Cause that would be the time where we'd all get together and drink. And, it was never good. I don't know. Well, so this is just my first attempt at just trying to dump out some of this shit. I'm going to try to get better at it. I think the whole point of this podcast is just to try to show that if you're struggling with getting sober or addiction and the person to your right or to your left is making it look so easy, it's not easy. It's a constant battle. And 23 years later, I'll just tell you that I got sober in 1997. After 7 years, I drank because of this voice. This voice was in my head. I was working over in Easton. This voice said, look how freaking good you've done. You deserve it. And that kind of set the seed. And then all of a sudden, I just couldn't stop thinking how much I deserved this drink. You know? And I picked up. And I was hiding bottles of vodka by the end of the week. And I think back and I would drink a pint before my wife would get home. And she wouldn't even know that I'd been drinking. But finally, I convinced her that I thought that I'd done so well that I should probably be able to drink. And she said, well, if that's what you think, you know, okay. So we tried drinking together. And immediately, I remember cell phones getting thrown, you know, arguments, smoking cigarettes. I mean, I reverted back to this knucklehead that I was, you know, previously 7 years ago. And it was just a nightmare. So I drank, I fell back in probably for another year. And 1999, I hurt my back deadlifting. So I was struggling with using pain pills that were prescribed to me. I thought since they were prescribed, and I was in pain, that it was necessary. Later on, I would realize I was just basically getting drunk on pills and using the excuse of pain. That would be that's a whole nother podcast. But, you know, I bounced around for a year or so, finally got sober again because my wife left. I woke up to an empty house. It's always shame and guilt, right? It's always been shame and guilt that has been my biggest motivator for change in my life. It's not because I should. It's always been because I'm embarrassed or I've let everybody down, and that wall of self gets crushed. You know, there's humility, humiliate, and humiliation. Humiliation, ultimate ego devastation. And that's usually what it takes for me to make a change in my life. Waking up to an empty house was the you would think would be the change, but I actually would drink for a few more days after that, and then finally a guy came and got me and took me to this sober living house up in Pennsylvania. And I was up there for 9 days, and that was the last time I had a drink. But it wouldn't be for 2 more years that I would have finally changed my sobriety date one more time because of these pain pills. I was taking them. And I thought that it was okay, but in my buddy Matt, who I'll get into later on in these podcasts, who would turn out to be, you know, really my saving grace, said to me, he said, listen, if you want to be sober, you need to change your sobriety date. You need to be honest about this. So I changed my sobriety date, December 22nd. I don't know the year. I know that this December I'll celebrate 12 years of being sober from alcohol and drugs. And but I'll get into the story and share more about the little things, right, wrong, whatever it is. I'm not going to cure anybody. I'm not going to get anybody sober. I'm just basically debriefing for the last 23 years. And maybe I can find some serenity for myself, even though I feel like I'm pretty serene. But so listen, I hope everybody has a great day. My name is Tom. I'm an alcoholic, and catch you on the next time. Bye.
Who the fuck is this? Paging me at 5:46 in the morning. Crack of dawning. Now I'm yawning. Wipe the cold out my eye. See who's this paging me and why. It's my nigga Pop from the barbershop. Told me he was in the gambling spot and heard the intricate plot. A niggas wanna stick me like flypaper, neighbor. Slow down, love, please chill, drop the paper. Remember them niggas from the hill up in Brownville that you rode dice with, smoking us and got nice with? Yeah, my nigga Fame up in Prospect. Nah, them my niggas, nah, love wouldn't disrespect. I didn't say them, they schooled me to some niggas that you knew from back when you was clocking minor figures. Now they heard you blowing up like nitro, and they wanna stick the knife through your windpipe slow. So, thank Fame for warning me, cause now I'm warning you. I got the Mac, nigga, tell me what you gonna do.
Damn, niggas wanna stick me for my paper. Damn, niggas wanna stick me for my paper. Damn. Niggas wanna stick me for my paper. Damn. Niggas wanna stick me for my paper.
They heard about the Rolexes and the Lexus with the Texas license plates out of state. They heard about the pounds you got down in Georgetown. And they heard you got half of Virginia locked down. They even heard about the clip you bought your mom up Florida, the fifth corridor.
Call the coroner. It's gonna be a lot of slow singing and flower bringing if my burglar alarm starts ringing. What you think all the guns is for? All-purpose war, got the Rockwellers by the door. And I feed them gunpowder so they can devour the criminals. Trying to drop my decimals, damn. Niggas wanna stick me for my cream, and it ain't a dream. Things ain't always what it's mean. It's the ones that smoke blunts with ya, see your picture. Now they wanna grab their guns and come and get ya. Bet your biggie won't slip. I got the calico with the black talons loaded in the clip, so I can rip through the ligaments. Put the fuckers in the bad predicament where all the foul niggas went. Touch my cheddar, feel my Beretta. Fuck when I'ma hit you with your motherfuckers, better duck. I bring pain, blood stains on what remains of his jacket. He had a gun, he should've packed it, cocked it. Extra clips in my pocket so I can reload and explode on your asshole. I fuck around and get hardcore. C4 to your door, no beef no more, nigga. Feel the rough, scandalous. The more weed smoke I puff, the more dangerous. I don't give a fuck about you or your weak crew. What you gonna do when Big Papa come for you? I'm not running, nigga. I bust my gun in. Hold on, I hear somebody coming.